The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly Extra, the we're a little bit tired because we were in Norway this morning edition. The Champions League, Manchester City lose at home, beaten by a little Fekir and his friends, and yet another great European night at Anfield as James Milner leads Liverpool to victory over PSG. Meanwhile, Maurizio Pochettino swears and explains that cows can't tell the time, but gets done at the death by Icardi and Inter, and Jose Mourinho is just not paying enough attention to the United in crisis narrative that the biased media want to keep on peddling. All that plus Ronaldo's red, a championship roundup. That's today's Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Jonathan Wilson, hello.
Hello.
It's nice to see you.
It's nice to see you.
This is from Jonathan Watts, who writes, I wonder if after the Oslo show, Barry and Lars get Larry in bars. Barry, did you get Larry in a bar in Oslo last night?
No, I got pizza and a couple of pints in a bar in Oslo last night and watched Manchester United's game against the young boys Burn.
Lars, did you have a nice time in your homeland?
Yes, it was great. We didn't get Larry in the bar. We really wanted to, I think, but we were keenly aware that we had to leave for the airport in like 4.5 hours. So
One of us overslept, and you'll hear the hidden recording of when I knocked on their door, if you haven't seen it on social media, at the end of this
you
podcast.
You put that on social media?
Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
I put a parental advisory on.
Kind of ruined the surprise there, Buzz.
I would like to stress that I didn't technically, I did oversleep. I plugged my phone into charge, the socket wasn't working, and my phone died, so I did no alarm.
But if anybody...
But I am now sitting here, I haven't had a shower.
Yeah.
And I just feel, you can probably smell me from the speakers of whatever you're listening to.
You look great.
Thanks.
Look craggy when tired, I believe the phrase is.
Right, well, let's crack on, shall we? Manchester City 1, Lyon 2. Barry, you had money on Lyon, didn't you? Well done to you.
Yeah, I kind of fancied them. I'm not sure why. I sort of have a reputation for having total disregard for French teams in Europe, but that generally tends to be more focused on PSG specifically and the group stages, or sorry, the knockout stages. But I like the cut of Lyon's jib, the way they have a nice mix of sort of experienced players and the way they blood youth. And Manchester City have never really convinced me in the Champions League. I thought first game going in cold, no Pep to micromanage them from the sideline. I just thought they might get caught in their opening game, and thus it came to pass.
Can you just tell me who scored the second goal for Lyon, please, Barry?
But you know who scored it.
Well, I do, but it sounds better when you say it.
It was Nabil Fekir.
You spoil sport.
Nabil Fekir.
That's better, Barry. Jonathan, is it a coincidence that they lost and Pep wasn't on the touchline?
It might be, but I think Barry's point about his micromanagement is pretty key.
What's so funny?
Barry nodding proudly because he said a thing about football that wasn't ridiculous.
How long's it taken?
Well, to be
12
honest,
years.
I kind of nicked it from him.
Oh, you read it on I was writing a piece about this on the plate this morning. You sat next to us.
Oh, I see.
I wondered where that had come from. I even used the word micromanagement.
Well, I was sitting next to him on the plane. I couldn't help but see.
No one likes a grass, Jonathan.
No one likes a plagiarist.
Yeah, but grass is worse, isn't it? Come up with your own thoughts on this, Jonathan.
I think we saw this, the Liverpool game last season, that when Guardiola's not there, they lack leadership. That, you know, his stream of instructions, the way he controls that team from the sideline, I think there is an element of them having lost the capacity to think for themselves. Now, the positive of that is they sort of act as this sort of almost automatic unit, and when that works, it's incredibly quick and incredibly sophisticated and incredibly impressive. But I think there is a slight danger with City that when things begin to go wrong, they lack the individual. You know, they don't have an individual on the pitch to say, right, we're not letting this game get away, and grabbing it and dragging it back.
And Roy Keane?
Yeah, Roy Keane and Brian Robson. So you think of what Zlatan said in his book of getting to Barca and finding these obedient little schoolboys. Well, you know, a nice obedient class is fine, but occasionally, in crisis, you need the awkward...
The rebel.
Yeah, so you think, you know, you think when Johan Cruyff brought in Hristo Stoichkov to the Barca that Guardiola played for, he talked about the need for mala leche, like, you know, literally bad milk, but sort of somebody who... didn't, you know, somebody a bit maverick, somebody who was prepared to be ruthless, to be a little bit underhand. And you wonder whether City, it's a tiny criticism, yeah, they won the league, but the record points total. But I do wonder when, if crisis occurs, do they have the personality and the leadership to drag them out of that? And I think it's perhaps a particular issue when Vincent Kompany isn't there, as he wasn't last night.
You know a lot about Barcelona. Have you written a book about them?
I have. It's called The Barcelona Legacy. Please buy it now because it's sinking in the charts.
Peter Crouch is miles ahead of you.
Well, I mean, he's played football, hasn't he?
Yeah.
That seems to make a difference.
No, it does. He's more famous.
And he puts some interesting and humorous anecdotes in his book, which also makes a difference.
I've got a story about Louis van Gaal breaking his leg doing the pole vault at 56.
Hmm. Was he doing the pole vault at 56?
Exactly.
He was magnificent.
His excuse afterwards was he was wearing leather shoes, not trainers.
So he was wearing brogues when he did the pole vault.
He was when he was RZ manager, and he went to a school, and he, you know, he saw some kids practicing athletics, and being Van Gaal, he said, no, you don't want to do it like that. You want to do it like this, and attempts to show them how to do the pole vault properly, and slips and breaks his leg.
I mean, I think you're much wiser to just pick up a javelin and give it a little hurl rather than try. Of all the ones to try.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if you're trying anything. A at 56 or B when you're literally with kind of child athletes, or C wearing leather shoes.
Lars, back to the football, I'm afraid. Are Leon actually quite good? Have we got complacent about Manchester City?
They certainly have players who can hurt you. I mean, guys like Depay and Fekir and Cornet's quick as well. I mean, if you pass it around at the back and you muck it up, they can immediately hit you before you can, you know, regroup. And it's a fair point about the micromanaging. I wonder if they also miss, you know, Pep's overall intensity guys, you know, this sort of thing. Like, if we learnt anything from this Amazon documentary, which I watched some of, well, we've most of all learned that Man City are amazing and just everything they do is great, which is good to know. But we also learned that Pep is just really on it at all times. And I wonder if the way they play with all the passing and... It is a very high-risk endeavour. Like, once that stops not working and once you get a bit sloppy, you get really badly punished really quickly. And Lyon have players with sort of pace and ability to punish you in that manner.
Can we criticise him for not starting Aguero? Not starting Sané? Or not really?
I mean, Sané was obviously key to the goal that City scored. But, I mean, yeah, it's not like he picked a load of youth team players. Yeah, they got a big squad. There's always going to be some good players left out, so I'd be reluctant to criticise them for that. I just think there's a sort of a more general point that I think if teams are brave enough to press City, and actually I think we saw it with Tottenham as well, this may be something Premier League teams find this season, that last season they were pressing much more aggressively than any other side in Europe. This season it seems teams are prepared to press back. And Tottenham didn't deal with it very well against Inter, and City didn't deal with it very well. But it is, you know, as Huddersfield found, it's a high-risk strategy, because if it goes wrong, then a ball over the top and the pace of Sane or Sterling or whoever will punish you.
We'll move on to Spurs in a second. Jonathan, your book is at number 50 in Amazon's Economic Policy and Developments book chart. So maybe you put the wrong category. Well,
that's the big one, yeah.
I'm going to read the other 49 before I get to yours. It also in that group, Shakhtar drew 2-2 with Hoffenheim. A Norwegian scored, Lars.
Yes, but he was also to blame for a goal that was conceded, I believe.
Was it Egil Ostenstedt?
No, it was Håvard Nordtveit, who you know... He does that sometimes. He's not always rock solid at the back. He had a dreadful game for Norway against Bulgaria recently. But,
thanks for that Norway update. Liverpool 3, Paris Saint-Germain 2. Thomas Tuchel's last two visits to Anfield. 2016, lost to an injury time winner when he was Dortmund manager. He lost to an injury time winner when he was PSG boss on Tuesday night. But it was a great game, Barry, I thought.
Very exciting. I wonder what Tuchel must think when he's watching a PSG team. He got the gig managing it, but they don't seem to play in the kind of way Tuchel teams are, were accustomed to seeing them playing. And I can't watch PSG lose enough. I get a great kick out of it. And they're a weird team. They've got like some superstars, and we all know who they are. And you've Neymar, Cavani, Mbappe up front. Don't try a leg when it comes to defending. Don't press, don't track back, don't do any of that stuff. And then they've got a few players that I think would struggle to get into a mid to lower end Premier League team, you know. And then the team selection, he's got a winger in central midfield, a centre half in midfield, and a midfielder in midfield. And I think it's just astonishing they didn't lose by a lot more, as impressive as Liverpool were against them. But, you know, they're among the favourites, if not the favourites, to win the Champions League. I'm guessing Real Madrid are probably favourites. I don't think PSG have a hope in hell of winning.
So that does take away a bit from Liverpool, because I thought Liverpool in the first half were just brilliant. But if the opposition isn't that great, then...
Well, they were very poor, but it's the adage. I'm not trying to belittle Liverpool's achievement, but I do think, like the game against Spurs, they made life difficult for themselves, unnecessarily different. But maybe they got a bit complacent, because in the second half, PSG offered nothing until they finally scored.
They didn't have a shot till they scored in the second half. And also, I think they only completed 8 passes in the final third in that 83rd minute, was it, the goal? But that 38 minutes or whatever it was up till the goal, so PSG had offered nothing. And Liverpool were playing at walking pace by then.
It's understandable that they would become complacent against such feeble resistance, but I would imagine Jurgen Klopp, while pleased with the victory, probably tore into them afterwards for letting PSG back into a game they had no right getting back in.
Well, I think the impressive thing from Liverpool's point of view, and the genuinely disgraceful thing from PSG's point of view, is that PSG have rescued a point in a game they had no right to get anything out of. I mean, they could have been 4-5-0 down. And bear in mind, this isn't even against Liverpool's first team. You know, the front three, Salah's clearly not quite right at the minute. And they're playing Sturridge's first start in Champions League game in 6 years, rather than Firmino. So it's not like it's Liverpool at absolute full strength. And they've somehow got back into it, you know, freakishly, when they could have easily been 4-5-0 down. And they can't even hold out for 7 minutes. They can't be bothered to do the defending to hold out for 7 minutes, plus injury time. And the correspondingly impressive thing from Liverpool's point of view is, having chucked it away, they had the wherewithal to put the foot down again. And, you know, the goal came after, you know, 3 or 4 minutes of pretty intense pressure. So, I mean... But it was just, it wasn't like watching two top sides. It was like watching, I don't know what it's like watching, because PSG aren't like anything that's ever existed in football before. This collection of stars, you just can't be arsed.
Lars, how do you view it?
I think it's baffling that a team with their resources, and I get that they have financial fair play problems now, end up...
Which
in
are entirely
such...
self-inflicted, though.
Yeah.
Well, they've mismanaged the budget.
Yeah, okay, so that they end up basically with no holding midfielder is bizarre.
It's Barry's point about the midfield, the fact you've got a winger and their best centre-back playing in midfield.
Yeah.
Because they haven't got enough midfielders in the
squad.
The
basic thing of putting together a football team is like having players for the positions on the pitch that you need, and they've actually not managed to do that. Now, I tend to think... But they're not complete morons. They must be aware that this is an issue, but it's as if the idea is that it's better for the brand to just have all these superstars. And I guess the thinking is they'll win Ligue 1 anyway. And hopefully if they get a smart enough coach, he'll find a way to make it work in the Champions League. I just don't see how it can ever work in the Champions League.
I don't think it can. I mean, yeah, the Champions League, there is an element of luck. So assuming they get through the group stage, I still think they will. It's possible they get a simple draw. It's possible... But yeah, you know, as with Chelsea in 2012, things fall their way. So it's not completely beyond the bounds of possibility to win the Champions League. But not going to win the Champions League as a good side.
But I also think it's interesting that they did come back in this game, in spite of being abject for most of it. And that exemplifies, like, even though it's not a team that makes any sense and hangs together and is constructed in any sort of normal way, they have such extraordinary attacking individuals that if they get any sniff of goal, they can score out of almost nothing, and that can get them results.
You say extraordinary striking individuals. Ryan says, on the subject of transfers that passed us by, Choupo Moting, who played for Stoke last year, came on against Liverpool on Tuesday night. It certainly took me by surprise. I thought that has to be a different... There must be another Choupo Moting I haven't heard about.
Well, presumably he just went down a list of, are you a forward who's prepared to shake a leg? And the first 580 on the list went, no. And he went, oh, yeah, I'll run about, yeah.
So Shaqiri came on in that game as well. So, you know, lots of Stoke representation. Liverpool were brilliant, I thought. James Milner encapsulates, I mean, a lot's been written about, as if no one's noticed he's been good at football for quite a long time. People have just realised. And Reece says, was Milner's tackle on Neymar a realisation of the wishes of every proper football man in the world?
Well, the weird thing is, Neymar had shrugged him off a ball about a minute earlier. And so I'm sure there was a bit of, you know, a bit of payback there. Neymar was sort of like, okay, Milner was sort of, okay, this isn't happening. This isn't right. Next time he gets, I'm going to go through him. And he did. And good.
He's such a talented footballer, man, and his distribution is so good as well. Since this game, there have been radio phone-ins. Would England have won the World Cup if James Milner had been playing?
Well, if there has, I haven't heard them, but probably not. But yeah, I think we spoke about how good he is on Monday and how consistently good he has been for 16 years. You know, he himself, he's quite modest about it. He says he's been lucky with injuries and that, but I don't think he's, you know, 16 years old, I think he made his debut for Leeds, and he's probably playing the best football of his career now.
Does he make a mockery of that when you look at footballers who start young and they say, well, look, he's already played because he started at 16? You know, you talk about Rooney or, say, Owen. Obviously,
I think a lot of it is down to lifestyle, isn't it? There are various... Michael Owen tailed off. He puts it down to his dicky hamstrings, and Wayne Rooney, probably not the greatest lifestyle for an athlete seeking for longevity. You know, he likes a puff and a fag, and he drinks to excess, I think. So that's not good. Milner, I think, is pretty clean living. You know, see also Jermaine Defoe doesn't drink, doesn't smoke, eats well. So and just people are all different. It's not a one thing fits all.
It reminds me of the Spanish striker Adoriz, who's sort of been improving into his 30s, confounding everyone, and he was asked about, and he made the point that, in his opinion, more and more players should be playing into their 30s now, because medical science, I mean, we know more about how to stay in shape, and players are coached better, and, you know, if you know of everything you need to know about dieting and yoga and whatever it is, you need to stay fit longer. So logically, there should be more players going on into their 30s.
I'm still playing at 39.
Badly, by your own account.
I mean, literally, it's an embarrassment, yeah. The whole thing. Andy Robertson as well, 10 million he cost. I mean, he's just... You thought maybe that game he'd look at Mbappe and go, oh, that's going to be a tough old day, and look at Neymar, but actually... It's just sensational.
Yeah. Well,
and Alexander-Arnold had such an easy game because he could just sort of wander up the right wing at will and play really well. But, yeah, he can have had few games where he had so much possession under no pressure at all. And then, OK, you've got to occasionally look at what Neymar's doing behind you. But, yeah, I mean, he looked great in that game, but he just wasn't tested.
Yeah. Unai Emery, I read an old interview of his after he'd left PSG and before he took up the reins at Arsenal, and he was saying, you know, different clubs are different, people are the main man at the club. I think he said, you know, Manchester United used to be, was Sir Alex Ferguson, he was the most important person at the club. I think at Chelsea he said Roman Abramovich, most important person at the club. And he said when I was at PSG, Neymar was the most important person at the club, and he clearly still is the most important person at the club. And I think Tuchel, in my opinion, should have just hauled off Neymar, thrown someone else into midfield to try and rescue what looked a pretty hopeless situation. But is he allowed to do that? Probably not. You know, what would happen if he did? And Neymar is clearly the main man at PSG, and that's not a good thing.
I've had Lassana Diarra on the bench as well, so, you know, he could have done that job. That Mo Salah video of him throwing a bottle, which originally did... It did make you think he's angry. You know, Firmino scores and Salah is furious. Apparently 2 seconds before the camera came to him, he was celebrating. So it's not as exciting a deal as perhaps any of us thought. Also in that group, Red Star 0, Napoli 0.
Good result for Red Star, that. I don't think many people saw it coming. Their return to Champions League football for the first time in over a quarter of a century. So good to see them keep that group even more interesting than it promised to be already.
Yeah, I suppose in a way it's also a good result for Liverpool and PSG because it means they can afford a screw-up somewhere along the way. Not great for Napoli.
Inter 2, Spurs 1. Pochettino's had an interesting week, hasn't he? Talking about cows and trains and telling the time, swearing in the press conference when he's asked if he regrets not picking Alderweireld and Trippier. I thought they were better, Spurs. I think I might be in the minority here than they have been. Well, oh, that's a low
better
bar.
Than they have been, but I still don't think they were very good. Just they were really unsettled by the way Inter pressed them. They gave a ball away an awful lot. And Kane, again, didn't look particularly comfortable or particularly threatening.
But they should have been out of sight before Icardi scored that brilliant
goal. I mean, they had two or three really good chances that, that, you know, they could have given them a comfortable lead. And then Icardi's goal is slightly freakish in that he gets the space because he's sort of gone down moaning, wanting a free kick. And so, and then nobody's picked him up as he stands up again. And even then he has to lash it in from 25 yards. So
you're making what was an unbelievably good goal sound very workmanlike.
The point is the same though. It took a freakishly good goal to get into back into it, but then Spurs just crumbled that last 10 minutes. I mean, that was old Spurs, the panic and.
How worried should Spurs fans be?
I think they should be worried. Yes, three defeats in a row for the first time under Pochettino. The whole Trippier Alderweireld situation is odd. For Pochettino to say they were left out for technical reasons, that's a deliberately unusual and vague term. So I think Pochettino was sending a message to somebody about something. I don't know what that is, but he could easily have said, they both got to both played in the semi-finals of the World Cup. They're both a bit tired. We're going to leave them out for this one. And nobody would have said anything. But to say technical reasons means you think, it's a bit odd. Something's going on here. So who knows what that is. But it suggests to me that there's rumblings behind the scenes that can't be positive. Plus all the stadium issue. Just seems that everything that was positive at Spurs has started to sour.
All those Spurs players could get paid a hell of a lot more elsewhere. So they've bought into what Pochettino is trying to do. And if what Pochettino is trying to do, I'd say the patience among some of them is starting to wear a bit thin because they haven't won anything. And if it starts to unravel now, there could be a big mad exodus in the summer. Pochettino said after this game it was their best performance of the season, and I couldn't believe it. He said that. I thought they were really poor, and it was quite kind of an embarrassing defeat for them in the end, because once Milan scored, as Jonathan said, there was only going to be one winner, and Inter duly got their winner.
Reports today saying several Spurs players claim the team's slump is down to exhaustion and mental fatigue and believe they should be given more days off. They're being worked too hard. I mean, it's funny how some people say footballers are not allowed to be tired. It's clearly possible.
It sounds entirely sensible. And carry on from what Barry was saying, if you're a Tottenham first team player now, you must look at Kyle Walker and think, well, he's making twice the money and playing under Pep Guardiola and winning trophies and having a great time, and can't even get the stadium sorted.
That's changed because before Kyle Walker left, they'd be going, oh, well, we could be Andros Townsend, let's just stay here. But now, oh, we could be Kyle Walker. That's a much more attractive.
But I'm really interested to see how things go with Pochettino now, because really since he came to English football, it's mainly been positive. Like, he hit the ground running pretty much at Southampton. His first year at Spurs was not good, but I think everyone understood that that was a weird squad that didn't make sense and had to be cleared up, and he needed time to get it going. And since then, it's by and large, like you say, it's the first time he's lost three in a row, and it's by and large been positive. He's never really been under some sort of negative pressure. He's never really had the press after him. He's not really had big questions being asked. He's not had a lot of big players in the squad getting questions about what's going on. So
Manchester United fans will be listening, saying if Jose had done a weird analogy about cows and trains.
I think this is ridiculous. I don't think that's weird at all. I think it makes complete sense. I don't know if it's an Argentinian idiom, but whether it is or whether it isn't, it's completely understandable. It's just because there's a couple of slightly wacky objects in it. People don't sort of listen to what he says. So do you want me to explain it?
I'm happy to hear about it.
He says that he's talking about experience. He says you can have a cow standing in the field for 10 years and every day the train goes past at the same time. Doesn't mean that the cow knows what time the train comes. So what he's saying is a cow standing in the field, but it doesn't really have a concept of time. And maybe it does, I don't know.
Cows do have a concept of time.
Right, but he's got no way of communicating that to you, right?
Well, they do.
Well, see, if you went up to a cow and said, what time is the next train to Nottingham, please? The cow would tell you.
No.
Exactly.
Cows in a field know when it's time to be milked. They will congregate and head, wait at the gate for whoever is milking them to come and get them.
Is that because it's 11:30 or because a man's come to get them?
No, they will be often there waiting.
Okay.
To be picked, to be brought to the milking parlour.
So it's Pochettino's...
If you went to the cow, what time is milking time?
Cows can't talk.
I know. That's part of the point, isn't it?
So it's Pochettino's mistake.
This is the second time I've heard... You tried to explain this analogy in Oslo, I don't know, less than 12 hours ago.
And you still haven't learned.
Yeah, I'm none the wiser.
So his point is that just because you're there, just because you experience this thing, just because you're understanding it in your particular way, doesn't mean that that is necessarily transferable in a useful way. So just because you've played in 10 years worth of Champions League games doesn't necessarily mean you know how to win the Champions League. You just experience 10 years of Champions League games.
So what's Pochettino saying? Experience counts for nothing?
Experience is only useful if it's used in the right way. And if it's... Well, I mean, if what Barry's saying is true, and I'm knowing your veterinary heritage, I have no doubts that you're right. It is useful to the cow, assuming there's no fence here. I don't know, maybe there is a fence.
If there was no fence, the cows would make their own way into the milking parlour.
No, I mean about the train. Oh, so okay. They'd know the kind of, 3 o'clock, best get off the track. And maybe they do know that. But he specifically said, if you ask the cow... It doesn't know, it wouldn't be able to tell you what time it is.
Producer Jonathan writes, oh my God, make it stop.
But he's Argentinian. He'd just hack a big lump of steak off its flank and throw it on a grill.
That's a point as well, because in Argentina, it's massively skewed towards beef cattle, not dairy cattle. So maybe he's talking specifically about meat cattle. Do we know that? So do beef cattle have the same sense of time as dairy cattle? And are dairy cattle... Are dairy cattle congregating for milking because they feel the pressure in their udders? Or are they congregating for milking because they get milked
at the exact same time
but
every
wouldn't,
day?
But wouldn't their lactation... How are we talking about lactation again?
Listen, it's nothing to do with me.
Sorry, just on the subject of the Spurs thing, I mentioned to Jonathan yesterday. Do you remember when Harry Kane... had that chance, he brought down glorious first touch, tried to take it around the keeper when perhaps he should have shot and ended up just running the ball out of play. He did a little hop there on one foot, a couple of hops, which suggested to me, and maybe I'm just reading far too much into it, that he was carrying an ankle injury.
Your veterinary training, if you saw a cow hopping like that, you go, ankle problem?
I don't have any veterinary training.
Came back too soon after that injury the cow picked up at Bournemouth.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, Spurs could rest Harry Kane. Like, it's possible. You talk about PSG and Neymar and it's almost like it's just unsubstitutable, unchangeable, etc. There's this feeling about Harry Kane because he's sort of so talismanic. And actually, Lamella came out and said, look, we've also got to step up. But Spurs have the players. He's been injured before and Son's played in that role and they've won games.
Sometimes, but they also lost. And Neymar thing isn't the play. You can take Neymar off and put Julian Draxler on and your team might even make more sense than it did before because he might track the fullback now and again. But with Spurs, it's like you take Kane out of it and you go to Llorente and that just hasn't worked out at all.
True. Also in that group, Barcelona 4, PSV 0. Lionel Messi scored more goals in the Champions League than PSV. So work for Tottenham to do now after that defeat.
He's probably made more tackles than PSG. Oh, fuck so.
Keep it in. Also in that group, Barcelona 4, PSV 0. Messi scored more goals in the Champions League than PSV, but that result. And Inter's win means work for Spurs to do. They play Barcelona next. That will be at Wembley. Construction News, which is not a publication I get regularly, although it is above you in the Amazon charts, Jonathan, reporting that White Hart Lane not set to be ready until January now, so Burnley likely to face Spurs at Wembley in December.
The story I've heard there is from builders of my acquaintances that the wiring was done all wrong. They did it on the cheap and it all has to be redone. And that sounds like a nightmarish job that could take a hell of a long time. I don't know if that is actually the case, but that is the rumour going around.
Do you know enough builders that if Nick Knowles was to leave that BBC One DIY SOS show, you could help the lives of the needy, Barry, by getting all your builder mates to build playgrounds and things?
I think I have most trades covered in the acquaintance department, apart from an electrician, funnily enough, which is exactly what Spurs need.
Oh, you've chatted to Stuart Pearce, though, on the wireless, haven't you?
So
get him in.
Yeah.
Marvellous. Well, I look forward to watching that. DIY SOS with Barry Glendenning. That'll do for part one. In part two, we'll begin with Manchester United's win at Young Boys of Bern. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Young Boys 0, Manchester United 3, comprehensive victory on the AstroTurf at the Wankdorf Stadium, Barry. Are Manchester United actually quite good?
It was an impressive performance last night, but I would not say the Young Boys of Bern provided the stiffest of opposition. That was not meant to be a double entendre, by the way.
But, you know, they are winning games now, Manchester United, and at some point, people like you, your sort, will have to turn around and go, do you know what, hands up, Jose's got it right.
But I will reserve judgment for the time being. But again, I don't think Young Boys were particularly good. I was fairly confident Manchester United would win that game comfortably, and they duly did.
Young Boys have won just 3 of their 10 home games in the Champions League, so that might back up your argument, Barry. Luke Shaw has been very impressive this season, Lars, and was again a player who has improved while Jose Mourinho has been there.
That's true. So, I mean, I guess the man management style of just being mean to everyone in public is the way to go. It's kind of a bulletproof approach for Mourinho, because if they fail, you can just say, well, you know, he's not got what it takes to play for United. And if they play well, you can say, well, it's all down to me. So it's strategically very clever way of going about things.
Has he strictly improved, though? Because he was the greatest thing since sliced bread at Southampton. He went to United, he was doing all right. Then he suffered that horror injury. Then he was kind of in the bad books. And now he's back sort of fulfilling the potential he had at Southampton, playing as well as he did there, you know. So would you say for certain he has improved?
He's certainly improved since Jose arrived at the club. I mean, because of the injury, but you know, it's not guaranteed when you've had an injury that bad you do come back. So, no. I mean, I take your point. This is what the sort of the curve that we hoped he'd have. But, you know, I think even with even our weekly meetings of the Anti-Jose Society, you know, we can't be too churlish about that.
Okay.
I do think the win against Watford was more interesting in the Mourinho United situation, because given the manner of the opposition, like, you should tonk Young Boys. Like, it's not, it would be embarrassing if they didn't. But
take that sentence out of context.
But the performance against Watford, while they weren't flawless and Watford had chances and all this, you could really see the team were fighting for him, and Lukaku making all these heroic runs, and it was a proper sort of battling Mourinho type-y performance. And that's, they've not turned on the manager, certainly. But for me, it takes more than a win against a really poor Burnley and a sort of scrappy win against Watford and then a win against a team from the Swiss League to sort of go, all right, the wealthiest club in the world are good again. But 3 wins in a row is not a bad thing.
Diogo Dalot made his debut at right back. I mean, for all of us, it would be good if he changed his name to Diego. But Mourinho said when United bought him from Porto in June, he was the best young fullback in Europe. Last night, he said he could play for United for 10 years. Also, did anyone enjoy the 25-step penalty from Paul Pogba? When you do that little tippy-toey one, who was the guy that...
Zaza.
That's it, Zaza. You've got to score if you do that run-up, don't you? A question, Jonathan. Would you rather be, in pure footballing terms, right now a Manchester United fan or a Tottenham Hotspur fan?
Where would he live?
It's equidistant. So like,
I'm living in Stoke. Brilliant.
No. If you live 1 mile from White Hart Lane, or
sorry,
Wembley,
sorry, the bloke who we met from Stoke last night was very nice, and that's unfair on him.
Yes. You're a local fan.
He doesn't want to live in Stoke either.
Okay, I'll reframe the question. Would you rather be a born and bred Tottenham fan or a born and bred Manchester United fan? Take out all the extra factors of being living in the north or the south.
I'd rather be a Tottenham fan, purely because if Tottenham do win the league at any point in the next, how long have I got left? 30 years, 40 years, whatever, hopefully, that would be a great moment. Whereas a team like United, success is sort of par. I think it's very hard to get excited. That's why United fans are also kind of angry and bitter all the time.
I suppose I'm trying to say who's in the best position right now.
Oh, okay. That's a different question.
Yeah, because United, whatever with Mourinho and how it ends up, but once he goes, and if he goes, they're still one of the wealthiest clubs in the world and they can afford to throw money at it until it works. Whereas with Spurs, there's a real concern that this sort of project may have peaked.
I think with Spurs, the positive way to look at it is, and this is sort of what I've kind of suspected might happen for a long time, is that this generation will not win anything. But because they've signed them all to long contracts, they can use this generation to fund another project. And so it might be that 4 or 5 years is when Tottenham actually kind of see the benefits of this side.
Valencia 0, Juventus 2. Ronaldo got sent off. Barry seemed a little harsh to me.
I thought it was harsh. I also thought it was funny, so I'll take it.
Joe says, nearly every pundit describes Ronaldo as a machine, but yesterday the machine displayed features of human emotion by producing tears. Is this a sign of AI developing emotional intelligence? And does Robert Earnshaw know about this already? He was unlucky, Lars, wasn't he? He did have a little tug at the hair, I guess.
I think calling that violent conduct is a little bit harsh. But I'm completely on Team Barry when it was funny. So, but yeah, with VAR, I don't think that would have stood.
In Group G?
The only thing I would say, broadly speaking, I agree with you. But why is he reaching his hand down? There's no need to do it. And it is a strange little gesture. It looks like almost like he sort of scratches his scalp. So I don't think there was a huge amount of contact there. But there's just no need for him to put his hand on Mario's head.
Real Madrid are doing okay without Ronaldo. A lovely goal from Gareth Bale. Beautiful pass from Modric. Isco with another goal. And a no-look shot that the goalkeeper saved. And Lopetegui looked absolutely furious with him. And a lovely goal from Mariano in the last minute. Lars, they played well.
Yeah, it might be a case of that. Since they don't have the sort of Portuguese Terminator in the box who's meant to receive every single ball, other players can let loose a little bit. Like, do you think Asensio would have tried the no-look pass if there was a chance of him being throttled in the dressing room by Ronaldo afterwards for not passing it to him? Or no-look shot, sorry. Mariano's very good. Bale looks very good. It's nice. I mean,
Tell us a bit about Mariano.
He was at Real Madrid's academy, and a few years ago was sort of running around in terrible lower league stadiums in Spain with Martin Ødegaard,
which we saw on Norwegian TV last night, which was astonishing research on their part to suddenly chuck up all these Real Madrid reserve team games.
Oh, I think you'll find there are very few Martin Ødegaard related things the Norwegian media can.
I was forgetting that link. Pretty good
on that, yeah.
I wondered why they started showing what I thought was Sunday League. I couldn't hear what was going on.
There's an Ødegaard angle for most things. And then he went to Lyon and did very well there and got brought back to Madrid. And it's nice to see him get some football.
Yeah, he scored 18 in 34 for Lyon last season. Pilsen drew 2-2 with Cesca. Also in Group G. In Group E, Ajax beat AEK 3-0. Left-back Nicolas Tagliafico scored twice, his second, and Ajax's third. Was a left-foot volley. I mean, from sort of Van Basten range, obviously slightly different because the ball's bouncing. I'm saying he didn't mean it at all. Anyone want to support Nicolas in his campaign?
Well, I've only just seen it for the first time, and I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Okay. I'm suggesting that everything I saw of him playing for Argentina, he didn't mean that.
Bayern won 2-0 at Benfica in that group. In Group D, Galatasaray 3, Lokomotiv Moscow 0. The first goal scorer, Gary Rodriguez. That's a bit like when Championship Manager runs out of real footballers.
There's a real dearth of Garys, aren't there? I think was it last year there were no Garys born in Britain for the first time.
Who's your favourite Gary, footballing Gary?
Gary Rowell, obviously. Great Sunderland centre forward, scored a hat-trick against Newcastle in 78-9.
Do you have a favourite,
Gary? Mabbott.
Mabbott, yeah. Sorry.
Okay.
With apologies to Mr. Lineker.
Okay. I'll go Rowett, because he was a sort of spotty ginger right winger when he started playing for Cambridge United. And then he has aged very gracefully, and he's a dashing man now. And also Gary Bannister. Schalke 1, Porto 1, also in Group D. And Group A, Club Bruges lost 1-0 at home to Borussia Dortmund, and Atletico Madrid won 2-1 in Monaco. One more game that we need to discuss. Southampton 2, Brighton 2 was on Monday night. Southampton throwing away a 2-goal lead. Hobier's goal was absolutely stunning. I mean, the ball stayed ball. Absolutely. I mean, it was just a beautiful moment of football. But Mark Hughes, as Richard Jolly tweets, his whinge rate as Southampton manager is twice as high as his win rate. 46% whinging about refs, 6 of the 13 league matches in which he's been in charge. 23% win rate.
I thought it would be more, to be honest. I'm surprised it's as low as 6 out of 13, but there you go.
It was a penalty. It was a push by James Ward-Prowse, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it was enough that kind of once it's given, you're not going to ungive it.
Yeah, I think so.
So there's a goal and winning a penalty from Duffy there. Match-winning sensation Duffy. That's great.
If I was Mark Hughes, I would have had a little whinge because people have got away with those, although it was a penalty.
But it's just, it's so joyless, the whole Mark Hughes thing. Like, what's the point of it? Like, he doesn't seem to be enjoying it. The players can't, I'd be surprised if the players derive much enjoyment from playing for him. And the fans, I mean, it's not great to follow. What's the point of it all?
Have you ever seen him smile?
I have, yeah. In a post-match huddle with the Monday newspapers. Someone cracked a funny and he had a good laugh.
Okay, good.
Oh, he was sent off in the first episode of Match of the Day I was ever allowed to watch. November 1984.
What was the foul?
It was a pathetic bit of the limpest fisticuffs you'll ever see with Sunderland's Dave Hodgson.
He's had one of my favourite sendings off, and I cannot remember the game, but he basically just booted a defender in the backside as hard as he hit some of his greatest volleys, Mark Hughes. It was a tremendous red card.
He might be a great guy for all I know. It just, what he's doing now doesn't seem to be any good for his demeanour.
Producer Jonathan has sent us a photo of Mark Hughes smiling, which is
terrifying.
No good for any of you listening. No. But he does look really happy there, so credit to Mark.
Imagine Ailsa from Home and Away after Alf has just cracked a funny and she's smiling, and then she's going to ring someone on her hamburger phone and pass on the joke.
There was a full championship programme midweek as well. Leeds atop, 3-0 win over Preston, who are second bottom. Bottom at Ipswich, he managed to draw with third place Brentford.
Do you know what would be great? Sorry, but if Leeds go up,
yeah,
Pochettino against Bielsa would be magnificent.
Because?
Well, because Pochettino played for him. But Bielsa discovered him. You have a famous story that Pochettino was 14. Bielsa had got a scouting report. Pochettino grew up in a small town bizarrely called Murphy, in the middle of Santa Fe province. And Bielsa went to visit, and it was late at night by the time he got there, and went into the sleeping Pochettino's bedroom, lifted up the bedclothes and went, "Footballer's legs, we'll have him." "Yep, yeah, thanks." And Pochettino woke up to find himself a New Year's Old Boys player.
It's a great story.
Slightly sinister story.
Sinister, but also great.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've written a book about...
Yes, yeah. Angels of Dirty Faces, that's even lower in the Amazon chart, so please, please help me out.
Is that, by the way, the inverse of the story of when Louis van Gaal just pushed Gerard Piquet over for no reason? That's
not a footballer, two weeks. Yeah, he'd gone to like a barbecue at Piquet's uncle's house or something, and the uncle went, "Yeah, this is my nephew Gerard, he wants to be a footballer." And van Gaal just knocks him out and goes, "2 weeks."
So Leeds... Leeds are top of the championship then, after that victory. Ipswich bottom, Brentford a third, Middlesbrough a second after beating Bolton. But some really sad news from off the pitch. Bolton's defender Stephen Darby has been forced to retire from football after being diagnosed recently with motor neurone disease. He said, "It's with great sadness I announce my immediate retirement from professional football. I would like to take the opportunity to thank my teammates, Phil Parkinson and all the staff at Bolton Wanderers, for their amazing support at what has been an extremely difficult period for myself and my family. I would like to ask for privacy at this time so I can adjust to the battle I have ahead and so that I can spend time with those closest to me. He's married to the England women's captain, Steph Houghton. They got married very recently, so we send our best wishes to them, and we'll end part two there. We'll start part three looking at the weekend's Premier League fixtures. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Before we look at the Premier League matches, we've got a live show on the 29th of November at the Emmanuel Centre in London. Me, you, Barry.
Mm-hmm.
Wilson, you're coming?
Yes.
And one more star to be announced. Do you think Lars performed well enough in Oslo last night to get that coveted final spot, Barry?
I thought he was a very good host.
Anything else?
No, I'm slightly uncomfortable with you announcing that there's a guest to be confirmed when there is someone here who... You know.
No, but I mean, you know,
it's a squad game, Barry.
Yeah, it's a squad game these days, Barry. You know, I'm delighted to be involved with the first team, and you know, it's just up to the gaffer, really.
Okay. And producer Jonathan in that break also showed us the Mark Hughes red card that I was discussing. It was in an FA Cup game against Sheffield United, and 93-94, United are in that yellow and green kit. I really recommend searching it out, and he only gets a yellow because he'd already been booked. I mean, it is a straight red in anyone's book in any era of football. Right, the Premier League fixtures. It's an interesting set of fixtures. No absolute standout game here. Which fixture, Lars, piques your interest the most?
I think all of Sunday could be a lot of fun because Chelsea have been very good, but they've had, you know, manageable opposition by and large, and they've not looked rock solid at the back. So I think, even if Arnautovic is a doubt, I think coming up against West Ham, that could be... I mean, I think they'll win, but I think it could be fun and goals. And similarly with Arsenal and Everton, with Richarlison back facing Arsenal's, you know, less than solid back line. And Arsenal, of course, being good going forward, and Everton seemingly completely unable to defend last weekend anyway. I think those could be two fun games.
What about Manchester United Wolves? That could be fun, couldn't it?
Well, it's kind of the standout one. For me, in a set of fixtures, we were sort of remarking earlier, not the most inspiring card we've ever seen. But, you know, obviously everyone has to play everyone. I will be taking an interest in Man U Wolves. I think Wolves will provide a very stern test for Manchester United. I've been very, very impressed with them.
I think Palace-Newcastle is an interesting game as well. Newcastle have had a difficult fixture list to start the season, which I think maybe has, to an extent, masked the problems they've had. So, you know, I think that's a game they'd look at and I can't believe they'd look at that and think, oh, we'll win that. But they'd think, well, we could get a win there. And I think that'll be a test of just where Newcastle are at.
It was late in the live show, Barry, but you didn't seem to drink a lot yesterday. You did say you thought Wolves could be challenging for the top four.
I said they could be challenging for the top four next season.
Okay. Do you stand by that?
Yeah.
Does anyone agree?
I drank hardly anything yesterday. Oh. I knew I had to get up at 4:30 in the morning and still managed to not do it.
You're absolutely right. Either of you, where do you see Wolves if they keep going with this project?
I think bridging the gap from... I mean, okay, Arsenal I'm not entirely convinced by, but bridging the gap to the top six / top five I think is very, very difficult. I think Wolves, of teams who've been promoted recently, probably have the best opportunity to do that. But, you know, I mean, Everton have been trying for years to cross that canyon.
But I would argue that Wolves are much better than any Everton I can remember of recent vintage.
Well, they've played well so far, but you know, we're a month into the season, so we'll see how it goes, and we'll see exactly.
Saying they can't do it on a cold Tuesday in Huddersfield?
I'm saying that we've seen the wheeling and dealing we've seen so far has been to bring players into that club. I think there's a danger that when they're doing that in the Premier League and those players are proving they can do it at that level, that wheeling and dealing takes them out of that club, and that I think might place a check on them.
Lars, you've had your hand up for 20 minutes.
Yeah, no, I just, in the macro perspective, it really comes down to the owners, how much resources they're willing to put in, because they're clearly a very wealthy conglomerate who theoretically have access to a lot of resources, and if they really want to spend, they could do it. And through their connection with the Gestifuce agency, they have access to players who other clubs in their bracket might not have. But as Wilson rightly points out, what happens the day they get a massive offer for Ruben Neves and from Man City, for instance, that sort of thing. But I really do think they're worth taking seriously, because the ownership group are very serious guys. It's a huge and important company in China.
Also, the late kickoff on Saturday, big game for Spurs now. They go to Brighton. Some questions that came in on Twitter this morning. Ben, are you, Max, interviewing AC Jimbo on TalkSport later? Mark, talking to anyone interesting on the wireless today? Neil, are you going back in time to interview AC Jimbo on the radio later? So, yes, by the time this is out, I will have interviewed AC Jimbo on TalkSport. He is plugging his
current venture.
Current venture.
How's that going? Do we know?
Don't know.
Doing very well if he has to hawk it around various radio stations.
What should my opening question be, chaps?
So you've had setbacks in your career before, James. Do you think you come back from this one?
You are going to introduce him as 90s throwback James Richardson.
And just say, well, where have you been?
Yeah.
Like Andrew Ridgely, you just went and started a farm somewhere. We'll have a lovely time, and I'm sure that will make another podcast. Interestingly, because obviously Talks will have their own podcast, they don't really want us to talk about podcasts. It's going to be quite hard when he's trying to sell his, and I'm from here. Anyway. And finally, on the video that I put on Twitter of knocking on Barry's door at 5:30 a.m., 4:30 a.m. UK time, Garth watched the video and says, is Barry holding one of Wilson's orthopedic cricket shoes and is pissed off you've interrupted his torture routine, as after hearing about the socioeconomic factors of Hungarian football in the 50s for the last time, he's finally cracked and gone rogue. Barry.
No, I wasn't. If I was going to attack anyone with anything in that hotel room, it would have been the 3-foot-long shoehorn they generously provided for us. I'm not sure I've ever used a shoehorn. I've certainly never seen one that big. But I suppose it's not how big your shoehorn is, it's what you do with it that matters.
And Barry, on that note, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lars.
Thanks, Max.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you very much.
We'll be back on Monday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.
How are you feeling, Barry?
Fuck off.
You're a bit late. You're late. You're letting the side down. You've got to check out. Any thoughts this morning on your lateness? Any thoughts?
Barry, thank you.
All right.
You've anything to say to the press?
Oh, piss off.